You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today is Wednesday, December 16th, 2020. We're living in an age that seems to most people to be unprecedented. Of course, the era that we live in has never even remotely existed in history. The things that are happening in the last year, the last 2 years, are absolutely nothing new. Even the use of disease to manipulate people is nothing new, although never to this scale. Today we're going to be talking about a manifestation of this, something called the Great Reset. The nationalist movement is not known for having a lot of legitimate scholars, and it shows. So far, the only thing worse than the Great Reset are those that try to refute it. Most don't really have the background in economics or political theory. Those on the right call it some version of communism, which is incoherent. Those on the left calling it some variant of fascism, which is equally incoherent. The use of these much older terms that aren't even used properly in the right context show that there's simply right now not a language available to talk about this era. The few things on the right that's criticizing the Great Reset are mostly completely irrelevant, brief, and it doesn't seem that anyone has actually read the primary source documents. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight over the next hour. As always, I'm humbled by my supporters, people who've taken a radio broadcast. I mean, it's not a radio show in any traditional sense. It doesn't have any guests. It doesn't have any bells and whistles. Has no frills. Never had, not since 2009. Has never had anything like that. For it to be this successful, the tremendous draw that I seem to bring wherever I go is something that I didn't see coming years ago. Because it is stripped down. It is just me. But because we're in a situation of this huge intellectual vacuum in society in general, on the right in particular, with a few exceptions, so much has fallen to me. Of course, for decades, I specialized in Russian and Ukrainian history and in politics. Well, given that we live in an age where everything's connected, it's hard for me to stay and stick with that. So many fields are connected with that, whether it be international relations or economics or comparative politics or philosophy and theology. And with this huge dearth of serious nationalist scholars, at least in the West, I'm forced to go all over the place. But I've made it a point to stay within my field as much as humanly possible. I have a doctoral degree in two fields because I was in two fields simultaneously in grad school. But often even that's not enough to keep up with simply what needs to be done. And this has been the case in many issues. But the only reason that this can work is by the support both personal and financial, of listeners and readers. And I thank those of you who've assisted me. I live hand to mouth for the most part. But the positive thing about that, the silver lining, is that I'm much freer than my competition. I don't have to listen to anybody. There is no institution that's either giving me money or telling me what to do, since they're really the same thing. And most of my colleagues can't say that. And so it means that because of you guys, I'm in a very enviable position. I say what I want. I interpret things the way I want. And I don't listen to anybody. And it's really a great feeling, despite all of the negatives. The age that we're living in now, and we'll talk about this great reset, which is an economic program, but it's connected to everything else, is going to make this even more difficult. I was one of the first to make fun of the COVID mythology. It was back in March that I told small business owners to simply stay open. It's better to fight these dictates in court than see your whole livelihood fall apart. Only in the second lockdown here in Pennsylvania has that started to become a mainstream opinion. I predicted back then that you'll see small businessmen going under, seeing their whole life's work destroyed, going into bankruptcy and all the personal humiliation that goes with that, rather than stand up, rather than even begin to fight against these people. How can you even respect people like that? But I'm happy to say that tonight I went to patronized one of the restaurants that, in defiance of Governor Wolf's order, remains open. And there's actually a bunch of them around. Those restaurants that have been cited have gone to court and won. The Taste of Sicily was the restaurant here in Pennsylvania that was victorious in court. So then what's the excuse of these small businessmen that are staying closed, not only destroying their own livelihoods, but those that depend on them? They have no excuse. It's pure cowardice. They're afraid of being called names in Walmart. That's what it comes down to. They're not citizens in any normal sense of the term, and they're not people. It's not just a matter of a disagreement. They're not people that you can respect. And so when they do go under, it's the best thing that could possibly happen to them. That's what they deserve. On the other hand, those places that are staying open are packing them in. Everywhere I go, these places are, there's a line out the door. So what might happen is that their competition is going to tattle on them. And they tell on them to the state really just as a way to compensate for their own cowardice. They know that they're doing the wrong thing. These are the same kids in school that would remind the teacher that they forgot to collect the homework. That's you know, the kid that tattled on everybody else. That's who these people are. And because they know that they're cowards, they'll try to turn in these people who are actually doing the right thing and defending their livelihoods. The fact that we live in a society where they would rather commit economic and social suicide rather than stand up against an absurd and illegal emergency decree that has no foundation in law or history is one of the worst aspects of all of this. Even though they know if they do it, they'll win. So they have absolutely no excuse. So wherever you can, find out these places that are open and make sure to support them. Give them extra if you possibly can. Because the only reason that they would do something like this is that they're on the verge of total economic destruction. Now, that fact is very relevant for what we're talking about. Because, as I said back in March, and people are starting to finally kind of get the picture here, that one of the main reasons for these lockdowns was to shift income and wealth from what was left of the middle classes to the oligarchy. It didn't take a genius when this first happened to note that the big bucks chains were open while the mom and pop stores selling the exact same kind of things were closed. That people like Bill Gates were dictating policy for some reason. And that very few people even bothered to ask. And worse, that social media was censoring everything negative about these people. When I was removed from Facebook as a threat to democracy, it hurt me because I know, you know, I'm out of contact with a lot of people. But then I realized that I'm called a threat to democracy, which is something that I wish I had sent to me in a paper so I could frame it. That should be my title from now on, I'm quite pleased to say. And that goes for everyone else who's seen people like Michael Hoffman had all of their, you know, we've been on YouTube for a decade and all of this work now deleted for the sole reason of keeping these arguments from the general public. The left right now, as they've really always been, the left's function through the barrel of a gun. That's how it's been from the English Revolution on. Their concern with dialogue is phony. It always has been. No one cares about dialogue for its own sake. They only care about it if they're in a position to benefit from it. Well, because the left really doesn't know our point of view in any detail, when they come across one of us who really knows how to express ourselves, we tend to rip them to pieces. They've never heard our arguments put competently before. All the media does is present the professors, certainly, is present this as caricatures. However, we know their arguments in great detail. That's the problem. They need full control over information. And this Great Reset, by the way, is prefaced on the complete and total control of information. This isn't a matter of free speech. It's a matter of being correct. I don't need a constitution. I don't need abstract rights to tell me that I have every obligation, not a right, but an obligation, to talk about this. Truth is generally easy to discern. The only thing that causes a problem is our own self-interest. We don't want to see the truth. And people will use every conceivable kind of defense mechanism they can to keep from hearing it. The main reason that people don't want to listen to us and who attack us even physically is because if we're correct and they have a feeling we are, then their entire world is turned upside down. They'll lose friends. They'll lose their job. They could lose their family. They could never look at the society the same way again. They fancy themselves to be actually a part of day-to-day society, that the society is actually theirs. They start talking like us, it's not theirs anymore. They're now outlaws on the outside looking in. We can't assume that truth is a significant category for the bulk of the population, including the bulk of intellectuals. It is not. The main concerns are self-interest, utility, appearing a certain way, virtue signaling, you know, appearing harmless or at least, or even more, you know, helpful to the ruling class. These are far more significant reasons for holding a position, not to mention the fact that the sheer amount of information necessary to have any kind of even a tentative opinion on this stuff is very, very daunting. When you have a normal job and family and everything else, you don't have much time to go over this stuff. So most people really rely on headlines. So, what does this have to do with the Great Reset? The Great Reset is coming out of the World Economic Forum. I've cited from them quite often. And one of its founders is Klaus Schwab, who is the founder and CEO of the organization since 1974. Schwab is Jewish, of course, but his background is a little murky. He's not really an entrepreneur. He's never owned a business or anything. He was a professor of engineering in Germany for a long time. Somehow that translated into him founding and creating the largest, most elite organization of oligarchs on the planet that now are dictating global policy. And of course, they dictate this without dialogue, without discussion, in the name of democracy. Remember what I've said for a long time. I've said it for decades now. No one cares about procedures. Democracy isn't the mechanism of casting votes or debating openly. That is not how the word is being used. Democracy is identical to liberalism. No one is going to die for an abstraction, a mechanism. No one's going to go off into battle and say that they're willing to die for the right to a jury trial or, you know, a reform of sentencing guidelines. No, people do these sort of things for very specific, real, flesh and blood ideas and issues. What you're going to see when you study the documents of the Great Reset is that there is nothing more irritating in the English language on the planet, primarily because it is one cliche after another. I could just picture your first-year professors in universities pompously talking about this stuff. You know, words like upskilling and, you know, fundamental reorganization and, oh my God, stakeholder economy. I could just see them believing that they're actually saying something of substance. And so reading this stuff is painful because they're not really saying anything. But being vague, in other words, this kind of stuff is essentially one long press release. Being vague is a strategy. Using words and phrases that don't have any stable meaning is absolutely necessary for the ruling class. Everything exists because of deceit. So when you read Schwab's essays and speeches on the matter, none of which he wrote himself, of course, all these people have handlers. The committee that put them together will use one cliche after another, simply strung together. And the job of an actual scholar or a journalist in the real sense is to get behind what the jargon is and see not only what's really going on, but who's benefiting from it. There's a few components to this so-called Great Reset. And now this is directly from Schwab's and this, by the way, this work came out in June and July of 2020. So this, you know, was in existence long before this COVID nonsense. He says the first component is to steer the market towards fairer outcomes. Remember, these are the upper reaches of oligarchy talking about this. They do not define what fair might be. In trying to flesh this out, he says fairer outcomes is the same as upgrading trade agreements and to create the conditions for a stakeholder economy. None of that is ever spelled out. When you press these guys as to what a stakeholder economy is, there isn't actually a much older, worthwhile definition, but that's not how they're using the phrase. Stakeholder economy essentially comes down to giving organizations like Greenpeace and the Sierra Club a seat at these forum meetings, which of course has been the case for a very long time. The environmentalist movement has been the creation of oligarchy from the very beginning, starting in earnest in 1990. with the beginning of the global warming hoax. And he says things like changes in wealth taxes, the withdrawal of fossil fuel subsidies, and new rules governing trade and competition. He makes no effort to lay out what this is. Changes to wealth tax, he doesn't say in what direction. Withdrawal of fossil fuel subsidies. These are people who have not only demanded these subsidies, but have benefited from them for a long time. Well, if investment is going to go moving away from fossil fuel subsidies, they want subsidies elsewhere, in the so-called green technologies that they are promoting. And really the same definition goes into the second pillar of this, and that's equality and sustainability. Words like inclusivity and diversity are everywhere here. They never explain what that might be. He says, large-scale spending programs that many governments are implementing represent a major opportunity for progress. That's about as detailed as you're going to get. Keep in mind that these are the very same people and the very same institutions that gutted actual state programs to assist the poor and marginalized all over the world. That's obviously not going to change. What it comes down to is the complete takeover of all private wealth in the hands of an oligarchy and then giving a few crumbs to the middle class. Well, actually, there is no middle class, at least to the literate population, to keep them quiet. We're going to mention this here in a little bit. He uses the phrase, building green urban infrastructure, creating incentive for industries to improve their track record on environmental, social, and governance metrics. That sounds like a freshman syllabus in Business 101 or some ridiculous made-up pseudo-academic field. So ideology, which has always been a big part of this, is now institutionalized. I mentioned several times that the NASDAQ index in the stock market is going to delist companies that don't have non-whites and women and others on their corporate boards. At least that's their proposal right now. And finally, the third one, according to him, and again, this is the founder of it, or the promoter of it, talking about the fourth industrial revolution, which is yet another meaningless cliche here. And of course, the COVID nonsense is the pretext. Companies, universities, the state, he says, all join forces to develop therapeutics and diagnostics, testing centers, tracing, telemedicine, and everything else. Then he says, you're going to take that and you're going to bring that to every sector. Now, what does this idiot mean by the fourth industrial revolution? It really doesn't have any foundation in reality. The theory is basically that the first was water and steam power to mechanize production. That's not the traditional definition of the first industrial revolution, but it may be relevant. Then the use of electric power and mass production. The third, the so-called information revolution. And now the fourth, as he says, the fusion of technologies, blurring the lines between physical, digital, and biological areas. Which, of course, means that we're talking about genetics. We're talking about nanotechnology. We're talking about the conclusion, the trajectory of the belief that human beings are nothing more than machines or computers, whatever the trendy metaphor is, and therefore they should be treated in the same way. Now, the Great Reset was something that was put out by Schwab in June, July 2020. There's a white paper that came out in October that no one has bothered to read. And it's more important. It's resetting the future of work agenda in a post-COVID world. Keep in mind that all of this stuff has been talked about for decades now. Not a shred of this is new. The only thing that matters now is that because of the disconnect, the dislocation that this hoax has created, people are off balance. Their lives have been substantially disrupted, and therefore it creates a condition where they could force these things through. People are now used to governments doing exactly whatever they please, taking over entire economies, shutting down entire economies. How is it even possible for the regime to shut down an entire economy? That implies that they have power over the entire economy. And this is essentially the rough draft as to how this is going to be manifest in day-to-day life. And summarizing it is fairly easy. And again, it's just one cliche after another. They're going to make labor as digitized as humanly possible. The goal is 85% of all work processes digital or virtual. They want almost 90% to be working remotely, which means that there's no interaction whatsoever between workers. This is the institutionalization of social distancing, which, by the way, is a concept that's been around for years. I've been reading a lot of the academic literature on virus mitigation, starting from the so-called 2009 outbreak, talking about face masks and this. But all of these ideas and terms like social distancing, these've been around for a long time. There's nothing new. They're going to take what's normally done by human beings. 50% of that is going to be completely automated. So human input will be drastically diminished. And then, of course, they're talking about these what they call upskilling or reskilling. This is where the private sector completely remakes the education of what workers are functional, and to create their, give them a role in this totally non-human or transhuman environment. That there's going to be many fields that are to be considered defunct and new ones created. We'll see here in a minute how the Davos Forum, the World Economic Forum, explains how human beings are going to be herded from birth to retirement by the oligarchy into whatever jobs they think they belong in. Personal choice, which is kind of a modern thing to begin with, is going to be completely removed from human resource. This is really a human resource idea. But you take this economically and you see what it is socially, and you realize that this is legitimately totalitarian. The corporation itself is going to be wildly restructured. There's not going to be the brick and mortar company anymore. The buzzword now is networks rather than cubicles. This is not an improvement. You're going to hear all of these pseudo-intellectual journalists talk about organizational frameworks and obsolete organizational structures as if they know what they're talking about. And through digitization, there'll be an absolute minute-by-minute control of all activity. And of course, it's going to be the oligarchy, not just the state, but the oligarchy as a whole, completely in charge of where people work and why they're working. One of the more revolutionary aspects of this, which again has been happening for a long time, is turning workers into temporary workers, essentially into what they call the gig economy, temporary employment, going from one place to another, having no permanence anywhere. You get shuffled from place to place wherever you're needed. The concept of employment is gone, and so is the concept of benefits and any kind of connection to a union or to an organization is completely destroyed. The network economy means that there are no jobs anymore. You simply are temporarily needed in one place, and then you're brought there, you're given a flat fee, and you're moved elsewhere. And if you're in a field that doesn't matter anymore, you're finished if you can't be upskilled, as they say. The workforce is going to be reduced. They're talking about at least 28%, according to the forum. But the temporary, they're talking about temporary removal of workers. They will never come back. 13% permanently reduced workforce. Now, that's the basic fundamental structure of what this is going to be at the day-to-day level is in labor. But all that does is lower transaction costs. It lowers overhead and wildly lowers wages. It's not like there's going to be, you know, this is the institutionalization of alienation. In a society that's already dying, in a society that barely knows how to talk to one another, they're now going to make sure that there is no human contact, both as a worker and as a consumer. Now, because debt in the private sector is actually higher than the public sector, you're talking $20 trillion in the U.S. alone, everything from mortgages to credit cards to everything else, it's unrepayable. It's suppressing the regime's, you know, approach to economic recovery. There is no economic recovery, despite what the financial papers were absolutely lying about over the last couple of years. We've been in a very intense depression with a real unemployment rate of between 25 and 30%, and that includes underemployment. Debt is going to be forgiven. Student loans, everything else, is going to be wiped out. Now, chances are what that means is that the debt's going to be bought by the state and paid for through the confiscation of assets. The Great Reset's slogan is "Own nothing and be happy." That's not something made up. It's actually in their official video on the Davos Forum site. They'll wipe out debt, and in return, they'll also wipe out ownership. They'll seize all assets, including savings. And then everyone who agrees with the system anyway, will be put on a universal, what they call a negative income tax, or a universal basic income. Companies no longer will finance benefits. That'll go to the taxpayer. Everything will be dumped onto now this impoverished worker that has no debt, but also doesn't have a house. Savings, any kind of assets, any real property at all is going to be confiscated in exchange for this negative income tax and debt elimination. The debt's still going to be bought. No one's going to lose any money here. But the massive seizure of assets is what's going to make it palatable for the regime. Again, this has been happening for some time. This isn't really debt forgiveness. It's just sort of a new way of collecting. And because our people have no organization, nationalists have no organization in America whatsoever. We used to, wasn't that long ago, but it was destroyed from within. And many of you know what I'm talking about. But you know, that's the chronic problem of some of our people. We did have something in embryo, and now there is absolutely nothing. So there is no way to resist this. Unless, of course, things happen very quickly, which is always possible. Now, that's the basic structure of what this is. No one is talking about finance. No one's talking about inflation. Production, of course, will be pushed not even to the third world anymore, but will be pushed total artificial intelligence. Mechanization like never before. They talked about using robots from the 70s on to eliminate human work, and therefore wages and salaries and benefits and everything that implies. You know, but production is not going to be done by human beings. Delivery is not going to be done by human beings. Consumption is not going to be done by human beings. Artificial intelligence is based on the idea that human cognition is the same as a computer. I have a paper that I've yet to publish attacking the artificial intelligence, you know, the basic primary sources that they use to justify it. And they're trying to argue that computer programs that they argue that artificial intelligence is really no different than actual intelligence. But when they already assume that the human mind is essentially a computer, it shouldn't be surprising that they make that connection. It's a circular argument. So when you talk about anything like, you know, any kind of personal or institutional or collective obligations or rights, they never existed in the first place. I mean, clearly they're fictions, and have never been taken. You know, no one can give a reason as to where rights come from, where obligations come from. They have no idea. Computers and drones don't have these. And given that now capital and the state are essentially one entity, that they are one entity, they have no limitation. The Constitution hasn't had any relevance in America for a very long time. The regime does exactly what it wants. The mechanism here, as I've been talking about now for at least two decades, the mechanism is the fact that there is no distinction between private and public sector anymore. The private sector isn't subject to any kind of constitutional limitations. They're, in fact, protected by it. The only actual functional individuals in the postmodern system are corporations. They actually can exercise rights where ordinary people certainly can't and don't know how and probably shouldn't. Obligations are a different matter. But the obligation is being thrown by the wayside. Now, if you have a private sector that's not subject to any normal political limitations, then a combination of public and private sector, and which is exactly what Schwab is talking about here. These institutions that are really neither and both, they also then wouldn't be subject to limitation. The tight control of institutions and the judiciary and law and the tight control of information on top of it all means that it really doesn't matter anyway. Schwab explicitly talks about contact tracing. It actually comes from, I'll mention here in a little while, a computer program developed for tracking cattle, which is deeply symbolic, because that's really what we are to these people. Remember, the oligarchy doesn't believe in the spirit or the soul, and therefore cannot possibly believe in freedom, however you want to define it. There's no such thing as an autonomous computer. Nothing mechanistic could ever be free. But artificial intelligence is based on the idea that there's no difference between mechanism and organism. And they're going to erase whatever distinctions remain. So talking about this kind of thing is really a foreign language. The COVID thing. Now, somehow Prince Charles has something to do with this. Every once in a while, they quote him for some reason. I mean, Bill Gates is a billionaire. But Prince Charles, I'm not really sure why they keep going to him here. Anyway, he said recently that this Great Reset agenda is going to, quote, make people more receptive to big visions of change, having suffered through unprecedented shockwaves, he said. And then he gave a speech to the WEF. He said, with the idea of being forced to electronically prove your current health status in order to travel or even leave your own home have been acceptable 10 months ago? And of course, he's telling the truth. By the way, it would have been. If people won't do anything about this, don't even understand what's happening. You have people who won't go to one of these rebel restaurants that I went to tonight because they think they're going to be arrested. They're afraid that stating a politically incorrect opinion will lead to their being jailed and certainly losing their jobs. And that will happen, at least the latter. But the coronavirus just threw people off balance just enough to get them to accept this, having no idea what's happening around them. Now it's normal. So what's happening here is you're taking this, what already is a breakdown of fundamental relationships, and reorganizing it in such a way that it increases the profit of the oligarchy. And that's what happens when you crush all organization, when you crush all any kind of the formation of trust, social capital, so to speak. They're not hiding any of this. When the Great Reset was first put out in July, the newspapers were owned by these very same people, immediately began condemning conspiracy theories about it. Well, the idea hadn't even been published yet. So what are they talking about conspiracy theories yet? They're anticipating it, and in fact maybe writing the, you know, because so many people are so susceptible to this, the regime is actually going to be creating its own opposition here. So you have to be very careful in who you're reading. And that's why I'm actually going through the primary sources. It might not be as exciting as some of the ridiculous patriot stuff that's out there. But this is the actual, you know, they're not hiding any of this. This is what they're saying. The slogan, "Own nothing and be happy," is right in the World Economic Forum video justifying the Great Reset. And Klaus Schwab has made, his quote is this: "This Great Reset will require stronger and more effective government, and it will demand private sector engagement every step of the way." And Yuval Harari, who apparently is some kind of a historian, speaking at the last conference that they've had in Davos, said, "Organisms are algorithms. New technologies will soon give some corporations and governments the ability to hack human beings." Again, if you're not aware of that by now, that that's been in development for a long time, then, you know, you're probably a hopeless case. So the idea of the concept of the Fourth Industrial Revolution is a pseudo-historical, pseudo-intellectual justification for driving the middle class out of existence, of driving small enterprise out of existence, even medium-sized ones, and creating the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of the planet, shutting down huge sections of the pre-COVID economy. Now, the video that I mentioned, their introduction to the Great Reset, says that you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, which is supposed to be now the goal for 2030. And as they're saying this, there's this happy, you know, kind of smiling face. At the same time, a drone delivers a product to a household. And it says, "No humans were involved in manufacturing, packaging, or delivering this product." And of course, it's virus and bacteria free, meaning that they're going to keep this mythology alive. But they're already talking about the COVID virus, you know, mutating it. They could invent whatever they want. They can get doctors by the ton to agree with them, and everything else simply gets shut down. Those who are displaced will be placed on a universal basic income, as I mentioned. Assets will be seized by the regime. Again, you can't even talk about the state anymore. And it goes to the very same financial institutions that are promoting this. So renting and even just temporary use is now called sustainable consumption or saving the planet. And so they're not shy of saying that ownership will exist only in a very reclusive and non-public oligarchic class. But I remember in 2015, the UN's document, Transforming Our World, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Again, it's something that was discussed briefly at the time. And like all these other things, it's just one cliche after another. Protecting the planet from degradation, including sustainable consumption and production, natural resources, climate change, all these other slogans. And when they refer to things like sustainable agriculture, they're talking about GMOs. They're talking about the manipulation of genetic structures. Having no idea where that's going to lead, especially with humans. Their interest in wind and solar power is not necessarily a problem. It only becomes an issue when that's where capitalism is moving, that's where their investments are going, and they're going to force everyone else to subsidize it. Things like sustainable is one of these ridiculous cliches that again has no functional meaning. But it comes down to, you know, punitive carbon taxes. It comes down to forcing everyone to scale back an already increasingly Spartan life. But never do the elite say that we're going to change any of this. They don't like commercial airliners, of course, neither do I. But they don't say anything about their private jets. The idea of the Great Reset has been around for a lot longer than the COVID hoax. The COVID thing is how they're now able to justify it psychologically. Most people still have no idea what's happening around them. Most people are going along because they have no idea what the state is going to do. There are people who believe if you don't wear a mask, you might go to jail. And these are often well-meaning people. And this is what's being taken advantage of. Public ignorance is absolutely central here. Several years ago, I think it was a guy named Richard Florida, who phony, the University of Toronto, actually is one of the people who he mentions the Great Reset, long before this happened. And he said, the promise of a current reset is the opportunity for a life made better not by ownership of real estate, appliances, cars, or all matter of material goods, but by flexibility and lower levels of debt, more time with family and friends, greater promise of personal development, and access to more and better experiences. Now, to laugh and roll your eyes at this utter nonsense is easy. But suddenly, they're talking about, you know, the great addiction of property and ownership. Not them, but us. They're going to start promoting the idea that material goods don't do anything, which of course is true, but the only reason that they're doing it is because they're the only ones that are going to have it. I love the more time with family and friends where they're already creating a society where human interaction is discouraged. No one actually believes that these lockdowns have anything to do with stopping the spread of this relatively harmless virus. Assuming it's actually even been isolated. It's getting people used to the idea that the regime can do whatever it wants to you, can threaten you constantly, can constantly change its decrees, having no legal foundation, and get you frightened of each other. And that, of course, destroys a great weapon that's the foundation of all healthy societies, and that's social trust. Remember, these are the very same people who've gutted the social safety net in countries all over the world. These are the same people who have dismantled governments and started wars all over the planet so as to impose abortion, easy divorce, and training rights. This is what the U.S. military fights for every day. The head of MasterCard, Ajay Banga, talked about the Great Reset just a few months ago. Exists from the point of view of the corporations. He says, in order for it to work, the private sector must make it a part of its business model. In other words, you know, to be able to make money from it. There is no distinction between the so-called business model and politics. This will all come down to human resources. It'll all come down to simply administration. And he says, enormous trust has to be built between public and private sectors. And of course, the trust, I mean, he's not talking about virtue here. Trust means a merger. Governments have now shifted most of its data collection to these very same corporations. The woman that created the ChipSafer program, allegedly, is Victoria Alanis Perez from Ugaray. I don't believe the story that she invented this at 12 years old. It's too convenient. It's probably not true. Just so happens that she, you know, speaks English and is very attractive and everything else. Yeah, it's way too convenient. It's probably not true. But the notion of a chip implanted in cattle to keep them not only from escaping but healthy is exactly the model that's being used here. And it just so happens that this very same young woman is on the board of the World Economic Forum and is very much a part of the development of these ideas. As I mentioned, MasterCard USA is a huge part of this. Ma Jun from China, who is a Greenpeace, you know, Western finance environmentalist. Bernard Looney, who's the managing director of BP in the in Great Britain. Venture partners like Juliana Rotich. Bradford Smith, of course, who at Microsoft. And Nick Stern, who's at the Grantham Research Institute, which is both Microsoft and Rockefeller. And in fact, that old money foundation stuff is being moved away. And most of them have been bought by Gates and Buffett starting about 10 years ago. So what's happening with this so-called Great Reset? It's institutionalizing things that have been around a long time and giving them some informal legislative foundation. Trillions of dollars that are being pumped into Wall Street and the city in London of money produced out of nowhere by the Fed, creating profits, creating greater oligarchical power. A lot of it is based on, in fact, insider trading. Because as this Great Reset is being developed, people who are investing in just the right areas are going to make a killing. These people already know what's going to happen. They're talking about it. So insider trading can't be a crime anymore. Inflation will simply be lied about for now. I don't get the impression that this is a long-term procedure. No one has talked about how inflation is going to be controlled for here, especially when cash will largely not exist. And that's something that they're not even shy about anymore. And the total reliance on one or two massive corporations like Amazon or Walmart, done all remotely. Walmart has saw its wealth go from $8 trillion to $10 trillion just between April and July of this year. And we all know Amazon. These people knew what was happening. They've been talking about it for some time. There was the exercise in 2018 and 2019 in Europe about the so-called pandemic. This has been, you know, this is a very old idea. They knew where to send their investments. They knew exactly where to put their money, and it's paying off. That's how they suddenly become far wealthier than even they were before. But they can't allow a situation where the overwhelming majority of people simply can't function economically. They have to offer something. But even what they're offering is fraudulent. No one is going to write debt off. Now, of course, for so often, debt simply can't be collected. But that can't be done en masse, even at the private level. So chances are the expansion of the Fed's balance sheet is going to take care of a lot of this. And they're simply going to pump more and more artificial money or these electronic blips and wipe out the debt that way. Remember, money doesn't disappear, it just changes hands. And it began with buying up small businesses at, you know, fire sale prices, and is one of the reasons that the oligarchy has done so well since the beginning of the year. And as I've said about a million times, one thing that will keep people quiet is an upcoming war with Russia and or China. And if that doesn't succeed, the media will create another, you know, racial issue. They'll invent a story out of nothing like they've done in the past. Innocent black 8-year-old shot for no reason by a cop in front of his mother. They'll invent a whole story, who knows. And you'll have huge numbers of leftists and Antifa in the street physically destroying anything that goes against exactly what the Great Reset is. As always, these leftist groups are at the Davos Forum. You know, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, they've always been speaking at these things. There's nothing new about this. One of the most ridiculous frauds that the left is anti-capitalist. Capitalism has simply become leftist. It's largely already been a revolutionary idea. But the old 1920s image of, you know, this conservative banking establishment, of course, never existed back then. And certainly doesn't exist now. Capital, especially financial capital, is revolutionary. It needs constant chaos and constant alteration in how people live. There can't be any moral foundation, just like there's no monetary foundation. The notion of the gold standard means a lot more than just an economic foundation for the sake of some kind of fiscal discipline. It's also emblematic of the basic moral foundations of human behavior. To control desires, control wants, for the sake of some broader good, which, by the way, these same people denied just a few years ago. It's not an accident. As all this is going on, drugs are being legalized all over the place. Out of nowhere, heroin and cocaine, everything, the whole notion of the Schedule I has been removed in places like Oregon, a few other places. It's easy to be drugged up when you're simply working from home all the time, assuming you're working at all. Pornography and prostitution is going to take care of the rest of it. It will create an effeminate, broken, isolated, alienated, ignorant male population incapable of anything. And you'll have an increasingly angry, bitter female population that, as always, will look to the third world to take care of these things that, of course, their own men did a few years ago. As it stands now, I mean, I've come across the studies on mask wear have been around for a very long time, that masks do very little. Preventing any aerosol pathogen. And I've seen it, you know, National Center for Biotechnology, New England Journal of Medicine, Canadian Medical Association Journal, Hospital Infection, U.S. Center for Disease Control, over and over and over again. Atmospheric Chemistry and Physics Journal, over and over again, talk about the mask as being absolutely worthless and, in fact, dangerous. The only problem is that now, of course, they're being forced to say something else. But prior to 2020, there's a lot of, and by the way, Fauci never said that masks are, I've actually read that article about the Spanish flu. He never said anything of the sort. You actually have to read this stuff before you comment on it. But there are tons of works right now that the masks don't do anything. That now this COVID-19 nonsense is similar to, in fact, even easier than seasonal influenza. COVID-19 is even a much lower threat, certainly for younger people, even than the annual typical seasonal flu. This has been settled for quite some time now. We have no idea how many people have it. I've known people who've had it that I interact with. I'm sure I have it. Most of you probably have it. If you have no symptoms, it's almost impossible to transmit it. But even if you do have symptoms, transmission rate is between 32 and 33%. So you could be living with somebody. But even the CDC, I'm talking about a 99.997% chance of survival if they contract COVID-19 for up to 19 years of age, 99.98% for 20 to 49, and almost identical, 70 years and up, 95% survival rate. Nothing is what it seems. Nothing makes any sense. No one believes that shutting down restaurants and bars and stores and everything else has anything to do with the virus. There is no science that says otherwise. This is why YouTube and Facebook had to silence and take everything off that said otherwise. And of course, these companies will, for the short term, lose money. You know, the NFL is losing a fortune if they're going along with this. It simply doesn't matter. Advertising. I don't know if you've noticed this, but every advertisement on television has non-white people in it. It's like the country's 80% black, according to advertisers. That has absolutely nothing to do with selling products, because that's not what advertising does anymore. We all know that these products exist. The point of advertising is to associate the company with the ideology of the regime. No one wants to see this stuff. No one wants to see homos and trannies on every ad, but they are. They're everywhere. Mixed race couples are everywhere. Every ad is non-white. What does that have to do with selling, Ford motor cars? If anything, it would harm them. That's not the reason that they're advertising. They're advertising for the sake of membership in the club. It's about social manipulation. It's about the tight control over consciousness itself. Advertising has nothing to do with selling products anymore. And all this is connected with the nature of this great reset. It's an ideological revolution, although something that's been around for some time, just in inchoate form. I recommend the book Bowling Alone, America's Declining Social Capital, by Robert Putnam. I've cited it here before. I read it initially in 1995 in the Journal of Democracy, and he turned it into a book later on. The idea being is that exactly these kind of policies, breaking down social institutions, everything from bowling leagues to the PTA, to church groups, to trick-or-treating, to Christmas parties, this is where social trust is built. This is where basic human relationships are founded. Once you remove those or make them less significant, society literally can't function. But what the Great Reset is talking about is a non-existent society. They're talking about minimal contact among people, at least in a work environment, and the creation of fear. The idea that associating with people, especially the wrong group of people, will lead to the destruction of your livelihood. When you're being, monitored, when every aspect of your life is being monitored on the pretext of a virus, there's nothing then that the regime can't do. They're telling you how many people you can have in your house at any given moment. They're well aware that it has nothing to do with any illness, but people are not used to hearing it. And I'm really hoping that you guys are publicly shaming and mocking anyone you know who's doing this and going along with this. That's your obligation at this point. And supporting people who are fighting it, especially some of these restaurants and other places who are refusing to shut down, they need to know that we're on their side and we'll do what it takes to assist them. Anyway, everyone, I appreciate you listening, as always. Thank you for your support. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.